Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress right here in downtown Washington, D.C. A lot going on in the news. We have the New York primary tomorrow. It's going to matter, though I do think both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will walk away with it. It is their home states. Although, to some extent, it's Bernie Sanders' home state, too. He was born in Brooklyn, and he's got the gesticulations to prove it. But I do think Hillary Clinton will win, and I think it's nice to have different states, as we were discussing before the show, have importance. And if you live in New York State, make sure you get out and vote tomorrow. It looks to me like it's heading towards some kind of contested convention, Republican Party. I think Donald Trump will get very close. I'm confident he will have the most delegates, the plurality of delegates, more delegates than any other. He may not have a majority, though, given that Ted Cruz is working behind the scenes to get delegate after delegate and using the rules as Cruz knows how to do it. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is whining about the rules, saying they're unfair, even though they were publicized a long time in advance. I'm not a big fan of the rules myself. I'm actually not even a big fan of caucuses. I think that everyone should have a primary and that the winner of the primary should just determine the delegates, choose the delegates, him or herself, and that we don't have the machinations of state parties. And so in some substance, I agree with Donald Trump's, in theory, about Donald Trump's point of view, but you can't complain about the rules the minute they start hurting you. I mean, he had rules that helped him, things like winner take all in Florida that helped him a lot. And now he's complaining he doesn't like these particular rules that he didn't try to change a year earlier. The Democratic Party does proportional representation, which seems to be a pretty fair way to do it, though it does make it harder to catch up, maybe a little less drama. But perhaps that's why it's pretty clear Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee. And the Democrats also have superdelegates, which some people complain about. But to the extent that superdelegates are the elected people in the party, members of Congress, governors, people like that, I don't really have any problem with it. They are elected officials. They should know something about governing. And after all, the voters chose them. And so they should have a small role. I have no problem with that. To the extent that they're unelected party officials, well, I'd probably get rid of that. So if you want to call and talk about the delegate selection process, I'm happy to have you call in. If you want to talk about whether or not you fear Donald Trump or Ted Cruz more, call in about that too. There's interesting articles now. There's a front page article in the New York Times about Ted Cruz pointing out that he may be the single most right-wing candidate for president we'll ever in American history. It's funny. I've been thinking all along that the Democrats would do best against someone as wacko and wild card as Donald Trump, and I think we will beat him. But Ted Cruz is so far to the right, I think we can beat him as well. So I really don't care who wins. I suspect the Republicans will leave bloodied and beaten. The main thing for me will be in November, not just electing the Democratic nominee, but very, very important, getting Congress back, electing Democrats to the Senate, to the House, because at the end of the day, and you see what Republicans have done to Obama, it's very hard to govern when you only have the presidency. You really need the houses of Congress. And in fact, all the billionaires that Bernie Sanders complains about really aren't affecting the presidential race that much this year. They're pummeling the legislatures, not just the Congress, but state legislators too. As a state legislator, I live in Virginia, I can tell you that the Koch money is pouring in. In fact, a local law school, George Mason Law School, George Mason being the author of the Virginia Declaration of Rights and Freedoms, which was the precursor to the First Amendment. It's older than this country, a great, wonderful founding father. His name would be replaced by the name Antonin Scalia. The George Mason Law School would become the Antonin Scalia School of Law. Ass Law, if you will. They may change the acronym, but they won't change the idea that they're basically naming the school for an ass. Or, more particularly, a really dangerous man. A man who put his own religion ahead of everyone else. The kind of person Ted Cruz would choose as president. It's literally someone who wants to establish a religion. His religion. That's what Scalia always wanted to do. And if we have some time, I'll tell you about my own personal confrontation with Antonin Scalia. Because in his death, I think people are inclined to say nice things. But we should never forget what an awful person he was. I assume that when George Wallace died or Joe McCarthy died or any of those demagogues, that some nice words were said about them too. Because people are nice. But Scalia being gone is not, it's actually a blessing for America. I didn't wish the man dead, but I did wish him off the court for a very, very long time. Frankly, something that was simply debilitating but didn't kill him would have been fine by me. Something that removed him from the court. Maybe a, who knows, something, maybe not even malfortune, just something where he decided he'd leave the court would have been the same thing. But Scalia leaving the court leaves America with a chance for a brighter future on a whole variety of ways. But if you don't understand why Congress is so important, just look at the fact that the President of the United States, under the Constitution, nominates Supreme Court justices. And under the Constitution, the Senate is required to advise and consent. Now, they don't have to consent, but they have to at least consider the nominees. And now we have a majority of the United States Senate expressly violating their oath to uphold the Constitution and saying, we won't consider anybody Obama picks. Now, they're cutting off their nose to spite their face, as you might say, because the pick that President Obama picked is a very moderate man. Merrick Garland is a very middle of the road, highly respected. He's the chief judge of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and so he's the, I guess, most well-respected, highest, most powerful judge outside of the United States Supreme Court that we have in America. Highly praised by Democrats and Republicans. He's in his mid-60s. He's probably leaned slightly to the left, you would think, if President Obama appointed him. But he's really a very middle-of-the-road guy, one praised by Senator Orrin Hatch. And I am really hoping that President Obama, after Hillary Clinton is elected on Election Day in November, will withdraw his nomination. That's no attack on Merrick Garland. What it is a recognition that we can do better. We can get a younger judge. We can get a more liberal judge. The Republicans should pay for their refusal to obey the Constitution. For all too long, the Republicans have basically gone further and further away from a lawful society where we all get along. You could argue it started with Newt Gingrich in the 90s, impeaching the President of the United States for an extramarital affair that, frankly, I can name a number of presidents that are said to have had extramarital affairs long before Bill Clinton. None of them were impeached, including some of our greatest presidents. Moving on to 2000, the incident that got me to come to Washington, where the United States Supreme Court, including, yes, Antonin Scalia, did not like the result of the 2000 election, did not like that the United States had elected Al Gore as president, and so did something that I don't believe ever was done in American history and may it never be done in the future. They threw away votes. They took the hundreds of millions of Americans that went on Election Day and said, we don't care about democracy. We don't care about your votes. They don't matter. Bush wins 5-4. We won't even count your votes, Americans. And surprisingly, we didn't rise up in revolution. That actually, for people who talk about revolution, and I've talked about the difference between leftists and liberals on this show, that would have justified revolution. That would have justified riots in the streets. That would have justified Bill Clinton declaring martial law, perhaps, and saying that the Supreme Court, well, as Andrew Jackson once said about the United States Supreme Court when he didn't like a ruling, he said, when the Supreme Court gets its own army, they can tell me what to do. For the Supreme Court to choose the president and refuse to count American votes was truly unprecedented and probably the sorriest anti-democratic measure in American history. Thank you, Antonin Scalia. I'm glad you're no longer on the court. But the future of the court, I think, is bright. I do think Hillary Clinton will win. I do think the Democratic nominee, if it's Bernie Sanders, will win. Not to be complacent. We have to work very hard for it. And I think we will finally have a 5-4 court that respects the Constitution. We used to have it. I remember. I'm old enough to remember Thurgood Marshall, the great Thurgood Marshall. Wow. They called it Thurgood Marshall Law School. Wouldn't that be fantastic? A man who led the fight, was the end of the spear, the legal fight, to end discrimination in America, to end legal discrimination in America, the kind of thing that, well, Ted Cruz would like to bring back, or Donald Trump. And I remember when Thurgood Marshall was dying. I was in law school at the time, and I was very concerned. We were very concerned for his health. Interestingly, he actually lived in just a few days into Bill Clinton's presidency, but he recognized he could no longer perform his duties on the court, and he stepped down. If the Democrats in 1991, 92, if they, and there was good reason to do this, after all, Clarence Thomas was a serial abuser of women, had simply refused to appoint a justice the way the Republicans have, for the last 25 years, we would live in a different country. We wouldn't have all this massive money in politics, thank you, Antonin Scalia, caused by Citizens United. We wouldn't have this ridiculous idea that individuals outside of a militia or the military have a right to bear arms, have a right to carry AK-47s and shoot little children in Newtown, Connecticut, or a black church in Charleston, South Carolina. Thank you, Antonin Scalia. We wouldn't have a court that would even consider what the court is considering today. To say to all the children of undocumented immigrants in the United States, we want to round you up and deport you. That's the hearing that there's an oral argument on today. And frankly, I don't think it even would be before the court if Justice Scalia had not cast his vote at that time to put it before the court. Obviously, we need immigration reform. We need to find a way for the people who came here to do what my ancestors and your ancestors and, well, all Americans except those Native Americans have done, which is come and live the American dream. Escape from a foreign country where times are really hard, where people are persecuted economically, politically, religiously, and make a new life in America. And these children, think about what it's like if you're 15 years old and you came to this country when you were 2. And you know what? No other country. Well, all President Obama is doing in his deferred action program is saying, we're going to focus on the criminals, not on the little children. And the Supreme Court might overrule him? I don't think they will, though. I think Scalia being gone makes a major difference. And I'll explain more when we get back. If you want to call in and join the discussion, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the United States Supreme Court, as well as a number of other things. And specifically, I want to address the case that's being heard on oral argument today. It's the case of whether or not President Obama has the right to delay or not to not do deportations of children who've done nothing wrong, but their parents came here without papers. Undocumented immigrants. Should they remain forever second-class citizens in the United States in fear of deportation, or should they have a chance to live the American dream? Well, we all know politically what people like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump think about all this, but this, of course, is a legal question, and it has to do with the powers of the president. When you think about immigration law, it's actually a classic case of what we call prosecutorial discretion. You see, prosecutors cannot go after every person who breaks the law. Now, they're going to try to go after every murderer. Murder is a very severe crime. It's relatively rare, thank God. And I think you'll find that pretty much every prosecutor will pursue any murder case where they've got the evidence to prove the case. But speeding? Well, I speed. I admit it. I often go above 55 miles an hour when the speed limit's there. And as someone who speeds somewhat regularly, I can tell you that maybe 1 in 100 times does a speeder get caught. That's not because it's not against the law. It is against the law to speed. It's just it's a relatively minor law, nothing like murder. And we decide to devote our resources more to prosecuting murder than prosecuting speeders. We do prosecute speeders, but in the discretion of the prosecutor, we've decided as a society, and most prosecutors decide, they're going to go after more severe crimes rather than more minor crimes. The same is true with immigration. You see, the immigration authorities, the federal immigration authorities, ICE, do not have enough money to deport every single undocumented immigrant, millions of people in the United States. Now, perhaps Donald Trump wants to tax everybody, raise all our taxes, perhaps 20%, so that he has the billions of dollars necessary to uproot every man, woman, and child, or at least try to. We might have to double our taxes to do that. But since all the money isn't there, President Obama has decided that he's going to focus on the murderers, the killers, the rapists, the drug dealers, the people who are most dangerous, and deport them. And the people he will deport last, indeed not at all, because we don't have any money to do it, will be children who've done nothing wrong, whose parents came here in violation of the immigration laws, but who've lived here their entire lives, at least as far back as they can remember, often don't speak the language of their home country and would feel ridiculous and, wouldn't know what to do if they were dropped off in the country of their birth. Because they've lived all their life in the United States. Does President Obama have the power to do that under the law? I think he does. It's classic prosecutorial discretion. But that's the question before the United States Supreme Court today. Want to call in? 888-48-MARK, 888-48-627.
Pick up your number two pencils. It's time for Class with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This is actually my only day this week. I am going to be heading down to Richmond, Virginia. I am a Virginia state representative, what we call a delegate in the House of Delegates. And although my session is mostly through, we have a part-time legislature in Virginia where we only meet really 2-3 months out of the year, January through March. And that dates back, I guess, 400 years to the founding of the House of Delegates in 1619. It's a part-time legislature. Still, there are other states like that too, although it's relatively rare these days. Still a pretty much a full-time job. I meet with constituents and all that year-round, but it allows me to come back on the air to be with you. But this week is actually the exception to the rule that we only meet for January through March, and that is that after the governor decides whether or not to sign some bills and issue some vetoes, we decide whether or not to override the governor's veto. And that big session is Wednesday, so I'll be driving down tomorrow, and I won't be on the air Wednesday. I will be back next week, of course. actually for a special show on Tuesday. So it'll be right before the Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, and Delaware, Maryland primaries. So it's going to be gone for about a week. But don't worry, I'm not leaving you. I'm coming back. We've been talking about the United States Supreme Court hearing today, the oral argument, on the question of whether or not President Obama has the right under the law to do what, well, executives do all across the country, which is to decide who to prosecute. It's a tremendous amount of power, to be sure, to say that we're going to prosecute some people and not other people. And you can make a strong argument that if a prosecutor has all the money in his or her discretion, if everyone's taxes were doubled and the president had billions of dollars to enforce the U.S. immigration law in full, then maybe then his order would not be allowed under the law, his executive order. But in this case, where we have a limited amount of money and where President Obama has decided to prioritize getting the criminals rather than the children, I think it should be upheld. The question is, what will the Supreme Court do? Well, I believe that had Scalia remained on the court, we would probably have a 5-4 vote denying President Obama based on some cockamamie theory. You know, Scalia never had to worry about actually making arguments. He would just wave his arms a lot and ignore the Constitution, kind of like he did in the Heller decision, where he said, oh, I don't care about that part in the Second Amendment that mentions militias. I don't like that part. The founders didn't mean what they said. Just because it's an amendment to the Constitution doesn't mean I have to respect it. I'm going to ignore the first half and pretend it doesn't exist. And therefore, every 4-year-old child has a right to an AK-47. Well, you know, Scalia's gone. And with him has gone not all the right-wingers on the court. Certainly Alito and Thomas come to mind. Although, you know, Roberts and Kennedy are definitely pretty far to the right. But I want you to imagine what would happen if there's a 4-4 Supreme Court decision. So the four conservatives line up and are against Obama, and the four liberals line up with Obama and the Constitution. So what happens then? What happens when there's a tie on the Supreme Court? The Republicans have decided that they're not going to allow the President of the United States to use its constitutional right to nominate a Supreme Court justice. They're just going to, again, ignore the Constitution. By the way, do you know the last time Republicans in the Senate, who are a majority in the Senate, approved a Democratic nominee Supreme Court justice, a Democratic president Supreme Court justice? It may surprise you. That would be a good trivia question for you. Democrats, when they control the Senate, have approved Republican choices for Supreme Court, well, on a regular basis. Scalia was approved by a Democratic Senate, as was Kennedy, as was, let's see, I think Alito and Thomas as well. Well, maybe not Thomas. No, I think Thomas was. I think it was a Democratic Senate. Not sure. But I do know that Kennedy and Roberts, right? So it's pretty common that Democrats say, well, we don't like approving right-wing justices, but Antonin Scalia, who got, I think, a unanimous vote. We don't like him. We don't agree with his philosophy. But, you know, unless he's really, really terrible, we're going to approve him because that's what a Republican president has the right to do. He was elected by the people. Ronald Reagan was. He has the right to choose his nominee. So, again, that's my trivia question for you. I'll answer it after the break. When was the last time a Democratic president got his nominee approved by a Republican Senate? So what will happen if the Republicans keep Merrick Garland from joining the court and we have a 4-4 decision? Well, a 4-4 decision by the Supreme Court upholds the lower court's decisions. And normally, the Supreme Court is very careful to avoid what they call a conflict among the circuits. The various federal courts in the United States are divided into various circuits, the First Circuit, the Second Circuit. There's all the way up to the 11th Circuit, and then there's the D.C. Circuit, and then there's a separate circuit that does some specialty stuff. But basically, it's divided into 11 regions of the United States. And those that opposed Obama specifically chose the most conservative circuit in the nation, the Fifth Circuit, the circuit that encompasses Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, because that's one of the Court of Appeals where the Democrats aren't a majority. Because we've had a Democratic president for 7 years, about two-thirds of the courts, the Court of Appeals, have a majority Democratic-appointed judges, judges appointed by Democratic presidents. They went to a very, very conservative one. The Fifth Circuit has two-thirds of its judges appointed by Republicans, even though Obama's been president, even though we've had a Democrat as president for 16 of the last 24 years. That's pretty rare. So that court told President Obama he couldn't stop deportations of children who've grown up here, children of undocumented immigrants, what we call the Dreamers. Obama had to deport the Dreamers, the Fifth Circuit said. Now, I'm quite confident that the majority of circuits in the United States, the Ninth Circuit in California and Arizona, the Tenth Circuit in New Mexico, the First Circuit up there in Maine and New England, the Second Circuit, which includes New York, I'm confident the vast majority of Court of Appeals will uphold the president's wish to avoid deporting children so he can focus on deporting bad criminals. And what will happen? There'll be a conflict in the circuits. And because Republicans won't appoint a deciding vote on the Supreme Court, they won't allow him to be voted in, that will mean that we actually will have different law, different federal law in different states. I want you to imagine this for a minute. Let's say you've got a person who's living in Texas and maybe an 18-year-old kid who's been there ever since he was an infant, and he's living there and he hears the immigration authorities are out to deport him, which they can do, will be able to do if the Supreme Court upholds by a 4-4 decision the Fifth Circuit's ruling. What does he do? He gets in his car and he makes a run for the border. Not the Mexican border, the New Mexican border. New Mexico's in the Tenth Circuit. If he can make it safely to New Mexico, Arizona, California, most of the rest of the country, he's home free. It would be kind of like, not quite as extreme as, but kind of like when we had free states and slave states. And we had the Underground Railroad. And slaves would escape Tennessee and Virginia and make it to Pennsylvania and Ohio, where they would be free. Now, the same is true. And what will be interesting is that I think undocumented immigrants probably will leave Texas in droves, go to New Mexico, Arizona, California, go to other states, make their economies great, and actually do quite harm to the Texas economy. And we will live in a country half free, half unfree, just as we did before the Civil War. That's what will happen. It's the United States Supreme Court comes down with a 4-4 decision. And because of that, and because Chief Justice Roberts, right-wing though he is, understands how important is the legitimacy of the court, which bears his name, I think it's quite likely to avoid that. He might join with the liberals and come up with a 5-3 decision, thinking that at least he would prefer the United States to be unified than to have, frankly, unequal law and different laws, different federal laws in different states. We'll see what happens. Oral argument is today. The phone number is 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Dave from Hobolt County has been holding on for a while. Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, Mark, you accepted my call today. Thank you. I feared I'd be on hold again for the entire show.
No. I wanted to get my point out about explaining in detail about the Supreme Court, but I absolutely always happy to talk with you, Dave. What's up?
Well, it's probably been a long time we've been listeners and chatters, but so much is so terribly wrong with our country, and I do find a lot of courageous, enlightened talk show hosts, and you're one of them, is very guarded and reluctant to take on a lot of it, and that's discouraging to me. I find for one thing that troubles me this: we have a small fraction of 1%, this greedy corporate billionaire class. They certainly have less than 1% of the vote in a democracy, and yet that faction manages to often get 50-some percent of the vote. And I don't think it's just their skills at distorting and misleading. I think they play all kinds of terrible tricks.
Well, they use their money, for one thing. I mean, that's what Citizens United is all about. They buy elections. I mean, look at what the Koch brothers, just these two guys, each worth $30 billion or so apiece. The power. In fact, one of the main reasons why the House of Representatives is Republican today, even though, for example, in 2012, the majority of Americans voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives, but the House of Representatives remained Republican because of gerrymandered lines, which are done by state legislators, who are chosen largely by the Koch brothers because they feel like no one's focusing on elections. I can tell you, as a state legislator in Virginia, that a lot of Virginians don't even know who their state representative is. And so the Koch brothers' money has a ton of power and therefore can draw the district lines that causes the Congress to be controlled by Republicans. So the 1% may not have many votes. They do have a lot of money. And because of Citizens United, because of Antonin Scalia, money controls power.
In California, you would be an assemblyman here. That's right.
That's the title in California.
Among the things that's so wrong, we have these ruthless, greedy power people behind the curtain pulling the strings. And I think that's all the most of the candidates we get all the time. They have their hand out to these big, same special interests. And you talked about it several times in the past, and you had pretty much for yourself made the decision that even if the Koch brother types wanted to try to buy you, that was not.
I don't think they want me, Dave. I think they would be very unhappy with what they bought. I think they'd want to give me back if they tried to buy me.
I think that's true, and I think that's also true with a man that we both admire, Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah, no, they couldn't possibly buy him. But I have to tell you this. I don't think they could buy Hillary either. I think sometimes Hillary gets attacked because she is, admittedly, less pure in her beliefs than Bernie Sanders. And I respect Bernie, and I respect the purists, and I think he stands up for an ideal. But she can't be bought by the Koch brothers either. I mean, she's not as far to the left as Bernie Sanders, to be sure. But she's still pretty damn liberal. I mean, she and Bernie have agreed on 93% of the legislation when they voted together in the Senate. So you're absolutely right. Bernie Sanders cannot be bought by anyone. But I also don't think Hillary Clinton can be bought. I mean, I actually think when she asked him, hey, what have I done, you know, to support the banks since you think I've been bought by them? And he couldn't name anything. I just think that even though I have full respect for Bernie Sanders and his not being bought, I don't think it's fair to attack Clinton with that either.
Well, I know you feel, and I feel, that these big special interests, one, they are not stupid.
No.
And when they give big bucks to any candidate, they do expect something in return. It is not their nature to just want good government. They want more for themselves and to heck with the working people, the struggling poor and such. And they are contributing to most all the candidates. Not Bernie. And so that's, to me, saying, you know, obviously the media is a big corporately owned part of the problem.
Although I have to tell you, there was an interesting study done by Pew Research, which is a nonpartisan, and they found, and this may surprise you, that the person that the media was toughest on in 2015 so far, the most negative articles, more than any other person running, was Hillary Clinton. They were tougher on her than Donald Trump, tougher on her than Bernie Sanders, tougher on her than Ted Cruz. And I think that would surprise people who think that maybe the media is in the tank for her. I think, we have a very wide variety of media. What we have, unfortunately, is we have a left-wing media and a right-wing media, and we don't have Walter Cronkite anymore, someone in the center that everybody trusted. I respect Bernie. I respect the way he's raising money. I love that he's pushing Hillary to the left. I like the issues he raises. I'm glad he's in the race. I think he's doing a lot of good.
I think I am, too, and I think he is the hope for a country that wants to get, once again, in the business of representing the working people and not just the big, greedy special interests. thank you for being there, though, Mark.
My pleasure. Call in anytime, Dave. Thanks for your call. Folks, if you want to join in the conversation, we've got one segment left. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Give me a call, whether on the Supreme Court or the election or anything on your mind. Be right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Got a few minutes left and a couple callers. Get right to them. Let's go to Judy in Phoenix on line two. Judy, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello.
Hello, Judy. You're on the air. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Hi. I have an opinion about these superdelegates.
Yeah.
How on earth do you get a new person in government? Like, how do we switch from the Republicans to the Democrats if the superdelegates, of course, they're all Republicans. How do you get a primary that's going to give you some change?
Well, first of all,
they have too much power.
We need to explain what the superdelegates are. They're superdelegates in both parties. The Democrats have them. The Republicans have them. The Democratic superdelegates are Democrats. What they are people like Democratic governors, Democratic members of Congress elected by the people of various states to serve in the Senate or the House of Representatives. So they are elected officials. There also are a few party members. And like I said, I'd be for removing party members. They should only be elected officials. But they're only about 10-15% of the total. And what's interesting is that there's never been a case certainly in modern American history, since the superdelegates were created back in the early 80s, where they've ever gone against the elected delegates of the people. For example, Senator Obama, then Senator Obama, ran against then Senator Hillary Clinton, he was ahead in what are called the pledge delegates. And the superdelegates, who you might think would choose a more establishment figure like Hillary Clinton, went to Obama because that's where the people went. And so even though they could have overturned that nomination, they didn't. They stuck with the people that the people chose. So I think the Democrat Party has been pretty good on this score. Now, the Republicans, I'm not sure what's going to happen. We'll find out in Cleveland when Trump and Cruz and a holy war starts. But
Right. You know, they've got all these people in power, and they're so right-wing, there's no chance to get a more liberal type, like a Rockefeller.
No, the Republican Party has gone irrevocably to the right, and really the only way to bring the Republican Party back to the center is to elect Democrats. There's really no hope,
well,
I think, for
true,
moderates in the Republican Party. The last one, Mark Cook of Illinois, will be gone soon, I think.
Wayne Morris, way back in the 60s, I think.
There were lots of them in the 60s, in the 70s. I'm just saying they don't exist today. Thanks for your call, Judy.
You just said that. Okay.
I want to get to one last caller before we end, and that's Chad in Albuquerque on line one. Go ahead, Chad.
Hi, Mark. I know you're at the end of your run today, but I read a really interesting article in Current Affairs last week about Hillary's vulnerabilities as seen in a contest with Trump. And the fact that he was really tuned in, he's exactly the right guy to exploit her vulnerabilities in favor of people who are rebelling against his step.
You know, I still think she'll beat him. You're right that he has some power. I think it'll be a bit of a tough election, but I still think the majority of Americans will not go for Donald Trump. Thanks for your call, Chad. Sorry we're out of time. I'll be back next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, for more of the Inside Scoop.